Have you ever drawn a beautiful line on a sectional, picked 5 checkpoints along the route, and then gotten airborne and realized you cannot find a single one of them? I'm Pattern on Traffic Pattern here on Radio Hanger, and that moment of confusion about 20 minutes into your first cross-country solo is one of the most universal experiences in flight training. Today we are going to fix it. Shout out to our friends at AviationSoul.com. They make challenge coins for every step of the journey. Got your first solo? There is a coin for that. Private pilot, instrument, commercial, they have got you covered. Great way to mark the milestones that matter. AviationSoul.com. So let's talk about checkpoints. The whole idea behind Pilot Edge is that you look outside the airplane, find a feature on the ground, match it to your chart, and confirm where you are. Dead reckoning is the math side. You calculated a heading, a ground speed, and a time between points, and when those two skills work together, you always know where you are. That is what the Airman Certification Standards want to see on your check ride. The examiner is looking for you to maintain your planned course within a reasonable tolerance and to be able to identify your position at any time during the flight. But here's where students get into trouble. They sit at the kitchen table with a sectional spread out, and they pick checkpoints that look obvious on the chart. A small town, a road intersection, a lake. And from the table, it all makes perfect sense. Then they climb to 3,000 feet above the ground and the world looks completely different. Here is something I wish someone told me when I was training. The number one mistake in checkpoint selection is picking features that are too small, too common, or too similar to everything around them. Let me give you an example. You are flying across rural farmland in the Midwest. You pick a road intersection as your second checkpoint. Now think about that from 3,000 feet. How many road intersections can you see right now? Dozens? Maybe hundreds? They all look exactly the same. That is not a checkpoint. That is a needle in a haystack of identical needles. So, what makes a good checkpoint? Let's walk through this together. First, size matters. From 3,000 feet above ground level, small features disappear. A single building is invisible unless it is enormous. A pond that looked great on the chart is a tiny dark spot surrounded by 50 other tiny dark spots. You want features that are big enough to see from miles away. A large reservoir, a major highway interchange, a city with a distinctive shape, a river bend, an airport, a mountain ridge. Second, uniqueness matters more than size. The best checkpoint is something that cannot be confused with anything else in the area. A river confluence where two rivers join into one is outstanding. There's only one of those in a given area, and you can see it from 10 miles away. A large power plant with cooling towers, a major bridge over a river, a coastline feature. These things are one of a kind on your route, and that is what makes them powerful. Third, the checkpoint needs to be close to your course line. If you have to look 15 degrees off to one side to find your checkpoint, you have already introduced uncertainty. Is that town your checkpoint, or the one 5 miles further away? You want features that are within about 5 degrees of your nose, or that your course line passes directly over. When you fly right over it, there is no ambiguity. You were there. Fourth, and this one catches a lot of students off guard, your checkpoints need to be spaced correctly, too close together and you're spending more time looking at the chart than flying the airplane, too far apart and you have 15 minutes of uncertainty between known positions. For a typical trainer doing about 100 knots over the ground, a checkpoint every 10 to 15 miles works beautifully. That puts one roughly every 6 to 9 minutes, enough time to fly the airplane, check your heading, check your time, and then start looking for the next one. Now, let me give you a practical technique for selecting checkpoints that actually work. When you're planning your cross-country at home, do not just look at the sectional. Pull up satellite imagery. Look at what the terrain actually looks like from above. That town you picked is a checkpoint. On the satellite view, you can see it is surrounded by 4 other towns of the same size within 5 miles. Bad checkpoint. But that lake with the distinctive L shape 3 miles south, of course. Nothing else looks like it. Good checkpoint. Here's another tip. Use a bracketing technique. Instead of just picking a point feature, pick a linear feature that crosses your course line. A river, a highway, a railroad track, a ridgeline. When you reach that line, you know your distance along the route is correct. Then you look along that line for a specific feature, an intersection with a road, a bend, a bridge, and that confirms your lateral position too. Now you have a two-dimensional fix. You know exactly where you're both along the route and across it. Railroad tracks, by the way, are outstanding cross-country references. They show up on the sectional, they are easy to see from the air because they cut straight lines through terrain, and there usually are not that many of them. When a railroad crosses your course, that is a checkpoint worth marking. Let me walk you through a scenario. Say you're planning a cross-country from a small airport in Virginia out to the Shenandoah Valley. Your course takes you west over rolling hills and farmland. You sit down with the sectional and you need 5 or 6 checkpoints for a 60-mile leg. Your first instinct might be to pick the small towns along the way. Warrenton, Front Royal. But from the air, those towns blend into the green and brown patchwork below unless you are right on top of them. Instead, think bigger. Your first checkpoint might be where Interstate 66 crosses a river. That is a major highway and a river crossing in one spot. You cannot miss it. Your second might be where a distinctive ridgeline starts on the east side of the Blue Ridge. Third, the gap where your course passes through the ridge itself. That is terrain you can see from 20 miles away. Fourth, the Shenandoah River on the far side. A wide river in a valley is visible from an enormous distance. See the difference? Every one of those features is large, unique, and unmistakable. You are not squinting at the ground trying to figure out which cluster of buildings is which. You are navigating by the shape of the earth itself. Now, I know what some of you are thinking. Pattern? I have a GPS. I have 4Flight on my iPad. Why do I need to know this? And I hear you. The technology is incredible and you should absolutely use it. But the airman certification standards still require pilotage and dead reckoning skills, and there is a good reason for that. Batteries die, screens crack, GPS signals can be unreliable. I have had students lose their iPad to overheating on a sunny day in a hot cockpit. Happened 20 minutes into a solo cross country. If your entire navigation plan lives on that screen, you are now a pilot with no idea where you are. More importantly, pilotage makes you a better pilot even when the GPS is working. When you're actively looking outside, matching the ground to the chart, you are building situational awareness that no moving map can give you. You notice that the visibility is dropping to the southwest before the GPS tells you. You see the terrain rising ahead of you, you notice that the wind has shifted because your ground track is drifting left of your checkpoints. That is real flying. Here is a technique for your checkpoints that ties dead reckoning and pilotage together beautifully. At each checkpoint, you do a 3-step check. First, time. How long did it take you to get from the last checkpoint to this one? Compare that to what you planned. If you planned 8 minutes and it took 10, your ground speed is slower than forecast. The headwind is stronger than you expected, which means your fuel burn for the whole flight just went up. Second, heading. Are you on the heading you planned, or have you been correcting? If you have been holding 5 degrees right of your planned heading to stay on course, the wind is not what the forecast said. Update your wind correction for the next leg. Third, position. Are you where you should be? If you are a mile south of where you expected to cross this checkpoint, that tells you something about the wind too. Every checkpoint is a chance to update your mental model of what the wind is actually doing. And that rolling update is the essence of dead reckoning. You are not just blindly following a heading for 2 hours. You're constantly refining your plan based on real data. One more thing about checkpoint selection that students overlook. Think about what happens if you need to divert. Your checkpoints should be chosen with an awareness of the airports along and near your route. Not because every checkpoint needs to be an airport, but because knowing where the nearest airport is relative to each checkpoint gives you options. If you hit weather at checkpoint 3 and you know there is an airport 8 miles to the north that you identify during planning, that diversion decision takes seconds instead of minutes. And minutes matter when the weather is closing in. When you draw your checkpoints on the chart or mark them on your nav log, write down the nearest diversion airport for each leg. It takes 30 seconds during planning, and it could save you a very bad day in the air. Let me leave you with this. The goal is not to pick the most checkpoints. It is to pick the right ones. 5 or 6 excellent checkpoints over a 60-mile leg will keep you oriented, on time, and confident. 15 mediocre ones will have you head down in the cockpit, cross-referencing every bump and pond on the chart instead of flying the airplane. Big, unique, close to your course line, and properly spaced. That is the formula. Practice it on your next flight. Even if you have the GPS running, pick 3 checkpoints before takeoff and see if you can identify them visually before the moving map confirms your position. Make it a game. You will be surprised how quickly your eyes learn to read the ground. A lot of this comes straight from the Federal Aviation Administration's Pilot's Handbook of Aeronautical Knowledge, Chapter 16 on Navigation and the Airman Certification Standards for the Private Pilot Cross-Country Planning Task. Good reading if you want to go deeper. You can find everything we talked about today and more at radiohangar.com. Fly the airplane first, navigate second, and pick checkpoints you can actually see. I'm Pattern. See you next time.